If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift. My name is Gianni and it's a bit later than we usually do it, but I'm still joined by Mitch and Scott and maybe James, unless he has to duck out for his date. But today we're bringing you the latest in gaming news, including an interview with Carolyn Thant from Codots Games about their game which came out a little while ago called Wander.
Hi, I'm Caroline Thant. I'm here on behalf of Codots Games Studio.
Yeah, so things don't always go quite right for developers, so we're going to take a look at what they can do to pick themselves up after they fall down.
That's it, and our last topic today, we'll be looking at simulation and realism when games totally nail RL.
That's right, but first up, we are going to have a listen to the shipping news with Brian Fairbanks. Thanks, Brian.
The Australian Financial Review just published an op-ed piece by Ross Simons of Big Ant Gaming condemning a very common practice in video game companies worldwide, the unpaid intern. Like many other businesses, interns are often a mutually beneficial relationship. An entry-level professional gains experience, while a company gains the free services of an enthusiastic employee. For many game development teams in Australia and around the world, money is often scarce during the developmental stages, which makes this relationship incredibly valuable. Simon says this unpaid arrangement lessens the quality of those entering the industry. Only those that can afford to not be paid for their work are the ones persevering, which dramatically reduces the talent pool. Furthermore, this damages the diversity of the industry, as most people who can afford to remain unpaid for their work are middle upper class white people. Simons urges the game development community to pay for the services of their workers and stresses that diversity can only help the industry. You can find a link to his piece on our website. Research recently released from the Australian University RMIT in Melbourne reports that gaming helps boost academic performances in math, science, and reading among high school students. Associate Professor Alberto Pozzo from the School of Economics, Finance, and Marketing examined data from the internationally recognized Program for International Student Assessment, or PISA. He analyzed the academic results of over 12,000 Australian 15-year-olds and compared the data to their other online habits, which were also collected by PISA. Pozzo said that students who play online games almost every day score 15 points above the average in maths and 17 points above the average in science in a statement released by the RMIT. Conversely, Pozzo also concluded that the data reflected time spent on social media actually damaged the score of students who used Facebook or another chat every day by an average of 20 points worse in maths than students who did not use social media. Pozzo also believes the problem-solving aspect of gaming could help improve the cognitive abilities of students and create an arena for them to practice skills they learned in the classroom. Perth-based studio Pale Blue Dot Games released their flagship game Lumber Larry earlier this year, and it has recently gone free-to-play. Pale Blue Dot is run by Dylan Wakeford, and each game idea is in support of a specific societal issue. Lumber Larry was created to raise environmental awareness to the gaming community, and the studio's next idea, Blocky Roll, which is currently in development, will help to raise money for educational charities. That was gaming news.
Pixel Sift. No, seriously, Pixel Sift.
Thank you to Brian for the shipping news. Mitch?
Yeah, so video games are products, and just like old products, some of them don't quite hit their mark when they launch. Some experience mass player exodus, and sometimes just mere months into their launch. When this happens, developers need to react and modify their strategy to bring the players back into their ecosystem.
Now, there was a pretty notable game that launched at the same time as one of the, well, I guess probably one of the biggest games that's come out, was basically discovered this week that their active player base had decreased to about 500 people. The name of that game, Mitch, that you have spent money on?
I didn't. Overwatch. I didn't buy Battleborn, though.
Oh, I thought you said you bought Battleborn.
No, I didn't. But I did. I was going to, but it was either one or the other, and I went with Overwatch.
So I think a lot of people made that choice.
So otherwise, there would have been 501.
Yeah, I think it was one of the things that when genres become very popular, then every person tries to jump in on that genre and get involved. But you can only play so many games. So there's some games that are going to fall by the wayside.
The interesting part about this is Battleborn's actually not, if you actually look at Battleborn closely, it's actually not very, it's not the same as Overwatch. It really isn't. There's AIs, there's AI creep, there's other things. It seems a bit more like first person LOL.
It's not really about being the same game, though.
That's right.
The same audience.
Yep. Mm.
Filling the same niche in someone's life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's contesting that it's the same game, obviously, because Overwatch is the first thing. Like
Overwatch is not
time.
The first.
It's one, well, you know, the first thing to be the. I don't know.
I did a quick internet search for Battleborn just then, and I just searched Battleborn, and one, like, the first few images that came up when you push the image button are Battleborn, but the rest of it's almost Overwatch.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, marketing team there.
I mean, it's majority still Battleborn, but there are a lot of Overwatch images littered in there.
And this is where I was going to go. It's the first one to be marketed on such a grandiose scale, you know, with accompanying movies and blah, 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 like in its own bloody Pixar-sized development. You know, that's pretty amazing and hard to compete
with. They have a animation team working on a video for each character.
So we know why Overwatch has basically kicked the goals and is very successful. Some of the reactions that people have said after this number of around 500 active players came out was that maybe they should switch immediately to a free-to-play model, something that we saw happen not that long ago with Evolve.
I actually didn't know this until you said that they had done that, because I haven't been playing Evolve to that degree that I didn't even know that that happened.
And I think that was a lot of people. There was a lot of hype for it when it came out. People were very excited for it. I actually played a bit of it at PAX a couple of years ago when they came to PAX Australia. It was an exciting sort of fun game. Just kind of came out maybe at the wrong time. Maybe didn't quite hit the audience that they needed. Couldn't sustain that player base, which is so essential for a multiplayer title. They switched over to this free-to-play model. Their player base spiked up like crazy, but you know, the people who were sticking around and still playing were kind of upset because it was sort of a clean slate.
I did feel a bit annoyed that I paid $80 for that game and now it's free to play. It really kind of rubs me the wrong way.
But it's a winning kind of format that other games and developers have done to save their seemingly failing games. I remember Anarchy Online did the same thing when that launched. It was shipped with defunct or even wrong keys for the games, and it had inaccessible areas of the game where people just couldn't even get to. Funcom the developer spent months fixing all the problems and offered free trials to win people back, and in the end it's still going now, but it's free to play now, and there you go, it's still playing.
I think
it's a successful kind of rectify
where you see this most often. So seeing some games like this where it's free to play and they transfer into it, I guess Evolve is sort of an outlier in that. There's not a huge amount of games that do this sort of thing, but mostly in the MMO space, lots of MMOs get launched with lots of hype, and then all of a sudden, the player base dwindles off as the king, Blizzard, kind of is the only one that tends to be able to maintain that subscriber base in order to keep it going. And they all transfer over to a free-to-play model. You know, we've seen this happen with Lord of the Rings Online. Mm-hmm. The Matrix Online did this as well. For you who might remember that one. More recently, the Knights of the Old Republic.
That actually had a very similar marketing campaign to Overwatch in the sense that their cinematic, they had a very, they had very pretty cinematic assets and a lot of hype and a lot of press, and it kind of didn't really go the way they planned.
Yeah. And I think there's a difference between free-to-play versus completely free games. It's not a free game. There is obviously ways that you kind of gate off content or you make it appealing for people to spend a bit of money into it. And, you know, sometimes when you make a game, you can't just flip the switch to make it free-to-play because you would need to change everything so fundamentally.
Right.
You know, you could, of course, have something like Hearthstone that was designed with just transactions the whole way through, but there was a design element in it to kind of keep people in the game and to keep thinking about the game and wanting to continue on and keep playing it. So yeah, it's whether there's a better way to do this that we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of like another way, I guess. Like the one of the ways that Battleborn is trying to recover is just drastically reducing the price. So just the barrier for entry is just lower.
Well, it was $15 not that long after in a bundle that you could purchase it. So, you know, that is these things. Multiplayer games live and die off the people who are playing them. If
exactly.
there's no one playing them, then no one jumps in. You can't continue it on. It's kind of once the decline starts, it's hard to bring it back unless you do something like free-to-play. So, you know, there's no one silver bullet for it.
Another thing, another interesting point is that the modding community can help revive a game to an extent because, as we see with Arma 2, I don't know anyone that knew Arma 2 was even a thing until DayZ came out.
Yeah, and I think Arma 2 is really interesting in that it had it did have a niche audience, a very niche people in the technical shooter fans. But then when the mods came out, they actually opened up to a much broader.
It became less about it being like a war simulator and more about a game.
Yeah, exactly right. So
if you like simulators, you should stay tuned.
That's right. Well, let's jump into our next topic right now.
Did you know Pixel Sift is available on other platforms? You can find previous episodes on iTunes, Pocket Casts, YouTube, and on the Pixel Sift website.
It seems like there's another post-apocalyptic game coming out every week. I'm a big fan of the genre, and they are often filled with doom and gloom. It's kind of one person or a small group of people struggling to survive in a world that's clearly out to get them. Perth's Codots Games, though, took this well sort of travel genre and used it to explore the beauty of a ruined world in their adventure game, their puzzle game, Wander. Mitch caught up with Caroline Thant, who's an artist and designer of the game, earlier this week.
We're usually a two-people team, and I'm the artist, and Soma, the game developer, is based in Burma. But for Wander, we recruited David Lister, a very talented musician from Seattle.
So tell us about your game, Wander.
Wander is a 2D storyteller game with some puzzle elements mixed to it. We decided to use a different take on the usual end-of-the-world theme by showing hope and friendship in a seemingly hopeless world. There are no complex characters or plots or anything like that. It's just about two little robots wanting to survive and explore the world together.
So you mentioned that one of your developers is based in Burma, was it? Does that complicate things?
Yeah, I'm from Burma as well. But yeah, definitely. The main problem with working internationally is how it takes a lot more time. Because sometimes you might want to discuss something about the game, but the other members might not be online. And you really need to have good sync with each other as well to know exactly what to do for the game.
So I guess with an international development team, how did you find each other? Were you friends before or did you have to seek each other out online?
Oh, no, we were friends since I was in Burma.
Excellent. So you just kind of went your separate ways but reconnected through the internet?
Yeah.
Awesome. So I guess a lot of your gameplay is, I've actually played about half an hour of it. I just met the small robot. And a lot of the gameplay is focused on, I guess, the innocence of a character traveling through a world. How did you convey innocence throughout your gameplay experience?
It's probably because our main inspiration for Wander came from a Facebook post about a dog who nursed a stray cat back to health and how they grew up together. It was such a simple yet heartwarming story and it really moved us. So we decided to create a game with a similar innocent kind of feel.
So all from a Facebook post, that's really interesting. So I guess you've also, I've read a lot of like the material on your website, and you've mentioned that you have a show don't tell style of gameplay and like a game design. And what does that actually mean?
Since you've actually played part of the game, you probably noticed that there's no understandable dialogue in the story. It's because we really like the idea of dialogue-free story, but to allow the robots to be able to communicate with each other, we invented an alien language. I think it makes the whole game a lot more interesting, but also forces the player to focus on the body language and interactions of the two robots in a show and don't tell style. It's just like how we understand our pets without them speaking to us. And of course, it also makes the story more open to interpretation.
I love that. I'm glad you mentioned the language, because the language that they speak, it's, I mean, I don't understand it, but it reminds me a lot of Bastion from Overwatch. But did you actually invent the written language? Because text does appear on the screen, but it's not a text that humans can understand. But is that actually a language that you've invented?
Yeah, we made it from scratch.
So I noticed that you had a Kickstarter campaign. Other than to achieve money, what else did you aim to get from the Kickstarter campaign?
Well, you probably noticed that music is a huge part of Wonder, to build the atmosphere and the cutscenes. So we're lucky to have someone like David. He actually took the time to create unique soundtracks for each cutscene and location. So if possible, we wanted to add fully original soundtracks for the whole game, but we were a bit tight on a budget, so a Kickstarter was a good way to raise some funds as well as promote the game. But yeah, we're very happy that it reached the goal, because we could finally make Wonder reach its full potential.
Where would you like to go with Wonder now? Do you consider the game complete at this point, or would you like to add more to it?
Yeah, we'll definitely add some more content with future updates, because some people mentioned that there's not much exploration in Wonder, so we're thinking of adding more explorable maps and things like that.
Awesome. I was just wondering as well, on a personal note, I missed out a couple of the collectible maps at the beginning because I didn't know what they were. Are they able to be gone and gotten again, or do you need to restart the whole game again?
I guess you have to restart, or at least go back to a save point. Sorry about that.
Nah, that's all right. So I guess the world building is really important. So how did you come up with the particular style? I mean, the robot really reminds me of, the big robot at least, reminds me of Baymax from Big Hero 6. Did you take inspiration from any other works?
Well, we were quite inspired by WALL-E and Big Hero 6 and To the Moon. But yeah, people do mention that there's some similarities between those and Wonder, but I can assure you that the story is completely different.
So, in regards to the puzzles of Wonder, I really enjoyed the Boulder one at the very beginning. It reminded me of a couple of Boulder puzzles in Pokemon. How do you relate those puzzles to your art direction?
The focus of Wonder is not the puzzles. It's actually the story, and the puzzles are just a way to sort of show that the bonding between the two characters and how they overcome obstacles together. The puzzles do get a lot harder as you go on, but you can skip the puzzles if they're too hard, so that it doesn't interrupt the flow of the story. But yeah, if you want to get achievements, you can complete all the puzzles.
Was it difficult to make the choice to put in that skip feature? Because I know a lot of developers really don't want people blasting through their game and like not experiencing things that they've worked hard on.
Oh yeah, definitely. Actually, the skip option was a last minute idea, because a lot of our testers complain about the difficulty of like the last few puzzles. But we didn't want to tone it down too much, so we added a skip option for it.
Excellent. So just like kind of like a back out function, I guess.
Yeah.
So if people would like to know more about your game, where would they go?
We do have a website, codoxgames.com, and we also have a Facebook page and a YouTube channel. And I also have a Facebook page dedicated to my art as well. So yeah, you can check our latest updates on there.
Excellent. And are you guys showing off the game anytime soon?
For now, we released the game in late July. So yeah, we're just in the cooling down period, I guess. So, but we'll be making more promotions with a new update soon.
Wonder, a Beautiful Apocalypse is available on Steam now. You can head to codoxgames.com for more information.
You're listening to Pixel Sip. Now, you don't have to look far to find a decent simulation game these days, whether it's one of the slew of sims such as Farming, Truck or Goat Simulator, or just a game that takes its portrayal of realism to an all new level. There are now more games closely based on real life than ever before. Long have we come from the days of Roller Coaster Tycoon and the Theme Hospital. Our last topic for the day will be looking at some of the games that are ticking all the realism boxes. Have we got any? What games are ticking the boxes for you guys?
One of the most interesting ones that I have seen recently is the office simulator, the work simulator in virtual reality. It's set in a world where robots do all the jobs. So people, for their leisure, can pretend they have an office job. And Kate Rains-Goldie talked about it to us. And she's like, yeah, it's really funny to kind of, when you kind of abstract it in that way and see as all the silly things that happen in an office.
There's a version of that similar kind of game out on, it's coming out on Squanch Tendo as well, the VR development game company done by the guys that do Rick and Morty. Oh. That's the only game I've seen of them at the moment is some kind of office space one.
You're excited.
I am a little bit excited.
A little bit excited.
It makes me want a VR.
The simulation genre is obviously very niche. There's lots of things which are, I mean, they're sort of almost not games, really. They kind of start to be, you know, they are simulations almost. I mean, gameplay elements in games like SimCity, for example, where it is, you know, there's a fun element and you're trying to kind of play that. But then you can do some realistic stuff. Like, think about all the Euro truck simulators or the rail simulators where you can simulate entire rail lines. And
yeah, that is strange, like that whole kind of area of, like, I don't know, hyper-realistic, mundane games.
Yeah.
Like your farming, your Euro truck simulator. Yeah. That's like
tax accountant simulator.
Mechanic simulator, Fern Bus Sim, European Ship Simulator as well.
Asian Ship Simulator.
Well, you know, you can take your ships into all your favourite docks and harbours around Europe.
What happens when you hit international waters?
I don't know.
Like you're out of it. Game's over. Yeah. That's the end of the mission.
One of those invisible walls.
Yeah, like, the ship just smashes completely.
What are you, shipping away from the harbour?
That's awesome.
But anyway, I think that is a distinguishable kind of group of games that we need to kind of put in their own little thing where it's like mundane, hyper-realistic, but not really a game as much as it is an experience simulator.
Well, elements of realism, quotation marks, can be found in like other games. Like, for example, Animal Crossing, you have a mortgage in that. Like, you start that game and you owe this raccoon money for your house.
What?
And so I guess they can be these mechanics can be found in other games where you wouldn't really traditionally associate them with being real.
Do you know what's really funny? I remember having a thought as a kid when The Sims came out and thinking about the people, how they get points and they level up in their job and they have to do all these particular things to get in. And I'm like, oh, you know what? Real life is exactly like The Sims. And I'm like, it's one of these things you think of as a kid and you're like, no, actually.
Well, it is. Just nobody tells you when you're leveling up.
Yeah.
When you're getting valuable experience points.
Nobody knows if you sit in front of a bookcase for 15 minutes reading a book that you're going to get a skill point. So
it's all subconscious and very boring.
Exactly.
No one's getting a skill point for listening to this podcast.
Yeah, they might do in their podcast listening points category.
So when I was looking into this as well, I like I said, I feel like it's important to put simulation into their own little area because they're not really the games as far as, you know, overly challenging kind of games go. They're more experience-based.
Yeah,
whereas,
I think...
Well, did you not just mention Goat Simulator like 2 seconds ago?
Yeah. Okay, that's a whole other thing. But like...
I think it's one of these things...
With the power of PCs these days, like the idea of graphical realism is... you know, very subjective and basically comes down, or and ambiguous, I guess, because it comes down to however powerful your PC is.
What I think with this one is there is, like many things in life, a continuum in which simulators are like pure simulation and then versus pure actual games, and there are lots of things that kind of sit along that continuum.
And like I said, as graphics and whatever gets so much better, that line and that kind of gap is so close together now.
Yeah.
Well, some games walk the line actually quite well. For example, GTA and Forza Horizon.
Yeah.
They are very much simulators in the sense that, like, there is a certain, you're in a world, and it's a satire. GTA is pretty much a caricature of Los Angeles. But then, like, you got games like Forza, who they have driving mechanics that seem to be very grounded in reality, but the gameplay is still very engaging and quite cartoony.
Gran Turismo is the one that did it first.
Gran Turismo is amazing, yeah. I mean, Forza is a really great input into that kind of... but there's also other ones, there's, you know, Drive Club and whatever. I think, again, just to box them into their own kind of realistic little area, racing, sporting... a bit different. I mean, they are kind of obviously naturally exceptional at trying to be a simulator because that's their hook, and their selling point. And they're also annual, so they need to kind of keep on top of everything.
But by the same token, Scott, that you have your arcade racing games like your Burnouts, for example, which aren't aiming to be
absolutely
a simulation,
and
but
not
are
the
still
thing.
A sim thing, you know.
But yeah. But I feel like games like Gran Turismo are in the same kind of ilk as, say, FIFA. Or Pro Evo or whatever, because they're trying to actually emulate something as realistic as possible.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly right. You know, Peter, as you may know them, the people for the ethical treatment of animals, came out and basically petitioned the developer of Farming Simulator to include some more realistic, basically life on the farm, the actual including of the slaughter of animals as part of...
Look, as a farm...
You think that would get them more sales or less sales?
Probably less. As a farm boy myself, death is a part of the daily thing, but you don't want to... glamorize or even accentuate or make that bit stand out.
There'd be very few farmers that would also own an abattoir, so I'd say a lot of people would be basically loading their animals onto a truck and...
onto a ute and out into the local, and in air quotes, tip.
Yeah.
Chuck them out.
Yeah.
It sucks, man. That's the bad side about farm life, is it's real, and the real life is pretty gross sometimes.
And sometimes real life actually isn't fun as a game.
No,
so
no.
If you're thinking about a product that's going to be saleable that people want to play, people have obviously really enjoyed, using a large piece of farming equipment to harvest in a combined fashion.
Only thing I've seen from that game is two people racing tractors down the street.
Yeah, I saw one where...
I find that so exciting. I love the idea of all that game. I want to play it so much.
Trying to hook on the trailer and then engaging the drive as well. Mate.
See, and like some of these simulators aren't really great at what they do. I saw a demolition one today and it was kind of cool in the fact that it was just as good graphically as all the other simulators. But, you're knocking down a building with a hammer and all the bricks were just vanishing. I was like, this isn't realistic. This is a simulator, but it's not realistic at all.
There's also, like, the technical limitations of actually having these games work in that way as well. We were talking to Lisa Evans quite a few episodes ago now, but she was talking about creating a game that used real life statistical simulation, and the game itself was kind of something on top of that. So they wanted to make something as realistically, Lisa was trying to make something as realistically as possible, but then there was a game element on top of that because the simulation on its own is not fun.
It's not fun. We live in real life already, and it's not that great.
Yeah. Well, it's all right. We do all right.
It's got its moments.
We do all right.
It's all right here.
Every Thursday afternoon's pretty decent.
That's right. I think that's an interesting sort of contrast to call. We talk about, including some of these things in there. Peter's suggestion to put these in there. Peter have a long career of actually making games. You've talked about this before.
Hey, the Pokemon parody was actually pretty well put together.
We've brought up their games in other episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. And they do it for their own particular, because their particular stakeholders are interested in a particular, activity out of them. That's what they're interested in. But that doesn't overlap with making a fun game a lot of the time.
No.
And kind of calling for...
Some people would call the disposal of pigs fun.
Yeah, but
not me.
Well, if we're
some people.
Hey, now, Mitch. All right, I wouldn't put that one on the record.
If disposing's eating, then yeah.
Yeah. But, this is something that is obviously, because I think simulation is so broad.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I kept feeling the need to try and shoebox things into little understandable areas.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that good games and good media and good culture should actually explore real life things and sometimes take them from an abstraction and maybe, you know, take away some of that realism in order to actually properly explore it. So in terms of telling a good story, sometimes it's a good idea to not be as realistic because then you can't emphasize the parts that you need to emphasize.
I think a game like GTA really takes this in an interesting direction because it's like, you know, it as much as it is an amazing game and it's fun to play and everything, it is a huge mirror satirical hold up to, you know, society, especially Western culture.
That's right. Ramskull on Twitch has just said Super Tofu Boy by Peter that they came out.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be a Super Meat Boy.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Which was a great game.
Yeah. So there we go. Look, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much for joining us. You could join us on this simulation that is life. Maybe we're living in a hologram like Elon Musk says. Who knows?
But get your tinfoil hat on.
We'll be back next week. This week, though, you'll find all of the notes from this show on our website, which is www.pixelsift.com.au. You'll also find links to that website on our social media. Scott, won't you?
Yes, you will. Pixel Sifters, you can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift. twitch.tv/pixelsift and youtube.com/pixelsiftau.
Now, if you're digging through the internet, you might find some of our archives, wouldn't you, Mitch?
Yeah, so you can listen to them at a later date on either iTunes, Pocket Casts, or using the RSS link on our page, and they're also on YouTube.
That's right. Look, thanks for joining us. We will see you all again next week.
Peace out.
Catch ya.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.